Gunashchish, for being here with us today. You're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm Rhonda McBride. As dancers and culture bearers stream onto the streets of downtown Juneau for celebration this year, things will look very different from the last gathering in 2018. And there will be lots to celebrate. The grand opening of Sea Alaska Heritage Institute's new arts campus and the unveiling of the Institute's new culture values totem pole, colossal in size and carved in the round, the first of its kind in Alaska. There's also the new home for arts, which sits next to the Walter Soboloff building, both inspired by the design of traditional bentwood boxes. And this is only the first phase of a bigger plan to install 5 bronze masks from 5 different Alaska Native cultures. There's also a totem trail on the drawing board. The Carnegie Mellon Foundation has funded the first stage for the creation of 10 totem poles to be fashioned by Alaska Native master artists and raised along the Juneau waterfront sometime next year. I talked with Rosita Worrell, president of the Sea Alaska Heritage Institute, about how this project is designed not only to restore Juneau's Native identity, but to put the city on the map for North Coast arts. This grant is very impressive, $3 million for a totem trail. That almost seems unprecedented.
You know, the foundation was very much into looking at what was happening around the country. They were looking really at giving some presence to maybe underrepresented groups in terms of monuments. And so they put out this proposal and we immediately jumped on it because we've had this idea that we wanted to have totem poles representing our different clans and our tribes on the Juneau waterfront, kind of like reclaiming our presence on our homeland. And the grant became available. Of course, we asked for 30 totem poles, and we were very, very fortunate to get the 10, and we're very happy about it. And I will say that we are working on other opportunities to do additional poles, and some of them look really promising, but I can't speak to them right now. But for certain, we have the 10, and then we've got potential funds lined up for a couple of others.
I've noticed in your pattern of going after grants for projects that you will initially start with some research and then follow up that research with a request for money to solve the problem or in some way enhance what you started with the grant. Was there any foundational work for this project?
Well, I think it's been ongoing in terms of our vision, and our vision is overall to make Juneau the Northwest Coast arts capital. But you wed that to our mission to perpetuate and enhance our Southeast Native cultures. Plus, something very important to us is to promote cross-cultural understanding. And how do we do that? We try to educate the public about diversity, about Native cultures, about Indigenous societies. So it all came together under something that's very traditional to us. That's totem poles. They reflect who we are. They tell our history. Plus, it's a very monumental statement about Native people that we were here. We used the natural resources, our lands, to develop one of the, in my mind, and I think a lot of people will agree with me, some very outstanding art. Northwest Coast art form line is unique in the world. You just don't see it elsewhere. So much so that we are also proposing that Northwest Coast art be declared a national treasure. And we are working with our congressional delegation to do that. So anyway, the Totem Pole Project fits all of those goals and missions. And we like to say it's the third project in terms of making Juneau the Northwest Coast arts capital for the region and also as a gateway to the rest of Alaska.
So where did the vision begin to create this Northwest Coast capital? When was the seed planted, and how did it grow?
Well, I will tell you, we take our art so much for granted. And art, it's the whole being of us. Art is everywhere in our culture. It's on utilitarian items, on our ceremonial objects. When any visitor came to Alaska and to Southeast Alaska, they saw art everywhere. So language restoration was one of our first priorities. And then art became another priority because it went through a period of suppression. There were people who thought that we were worshiping totem poles and worshiping false gods and saw us as pagans. And so there was that whole suppression of our arts and our culture. And like celebration, we wanted to bring our culture out into the open. And what better way to do it than to do it with physical art objects that you can't miss? And anybody coming into Juneau will see these monumental 25-foot poles. And when you see them all along the waterfront, it really makes a statement and kind of a reclamation of us as First Peoples of this land.
I remember having a conversation with Byron Mallott years ago when he was planning work with Hawaii. Yes. And he said he was so struck by how you can travel all across Hawaii. So I imagine that a lot of people have sort of held this vision for a while to see more of Native culture expressed.
Well, I think you saw kind of like the beginnings of that in the 1960s, 1970s, and certainly the enactment of the Alaska Native Land Claims Settlement Act really supported that effort. We've called it a renaissance of Native arts and culture. But I think ANCSA gave us resources to really begin to initiate efforts to achieve that vision.
If you look at downtown Juneau historically, it has sort of the imprint of the mining history. Yes. It doesn't really reflect the Native culture, which was there long before mining came to pass. And I think that maybe bothered a lot of people.
Well, it certainly bothered us because when we tried to build the Walter Soboloff building, because we are in the historic district, we had to comply with the historic district requirements of having buildings that reflected that mining era. And so we had to go through a process in order to even build an architectural design that represented the First Peoples of Alaska, of Juneau. And fortunately, the Juneau Assembly approved of our design, but we had to go through a process. I know it's startling to a lot of people that we had to do that. We still have some work to do. They did not change the requirements, but instead moved us out of the historical district. And so that's something that we'll have to go back and amend that. We've seen it, you know, the support that we've gotten from the city and from our community, that they support what we're doing. And certainly we've seen it when building the campus, that we've had probably near 2,000 people, individuals, organizations, make contributions to the building of the arts campus. So we know that there's support in our community, but it's just a matter of us going back to work and doing that.
Well, you are, as you're describing, kind of seeing a transformation of downtown Juneau, maybe, you know, for lack of a better word, nativizing it, indigenizing it. And,
indigenizing.
I'm thinking of Tlingit and Haida Central Council and their new office building. So their footprint is expanding. And then with your arts campus, your footprint is expanding. So it's kind of changing the face of downtown Juneau, do you think?
I think so. And in addition to that, I think the city has embraced it. You see what the new signs that we have all around town using Northwest Coast art. I know some people are not happy about some of the other art that has been going up, but I know they are very supportive of the signs. that you're seeing all throughout Juneau, I think that's a really, to me, a mark of progress.
Boy, it almost feels like we are on the precipice of something big, because you also have efforts to expand Centennial Hall so that the Juneau Arts and Humanities Council can have a better space to do their programs. Do you think that there could be sort of a convergence of all these efforts coming together to make something bigger for Juneau?
Well, I see it happening. We definitely support Jack, and we think the arts are good for society. It makes for a healthier society, and certainly the community is open to Northwest Coast art. I think there are many people that would also support visual and performing arts other than Native art. So I think the makings are there. I think we've just come through some very difficult times, and I think that's what we're facing right now. But I'm one of those optimists and think we can do it, and things will happen.
When we come back, more of my conversation with the president of Sea Alaska Heritage Institute. We'll talk with Rosita Worrell about the process of making Native culture a part of Juneau's identity. Juneau Afternoon. I'm Rhonda McBride. You have been listening to Rosita Worrell, president of Sea Alaska Heritage Institute, and we have been talking about Juneau's long-lost identity as Tlingit Ani, one that for more than a century was almost erased by the town's gold mining history. But for Alaska Natives, the real wealth has always been in the culture and what the land provides to sustain it. For Rosita Worrell, the new totem pole to be unveiled at Celebration is an important reminder of that.
Let me explain. When I say 360-degree totem pole, I mean it's carved all the way around. And this is something brand new. I think we only have 2 totem poles carved in the ground in Canada, in British Columbia. So this will be the first pole carved all the way around in Alaska. And the pole will represent our core cultural values.
Yeah, it sounds like this is one of those projects that will always be growing and having new pieces added to it. But for those of us who can't quite see the vision, can you paint a picture for us of what it would be like to experience all of this once it all comes together?
Well, let me say that it's more than just the visual arts that we're looking at. We're also looking at performing arts. We're looking at the reintegration of Native language and culture into our communities. You're also going to be hearing Native people talk. You're going to be able to go down to the campus and watch Native performances, dance performances, plays, and even Native games. Before the shutdown, we even had the blanket toss out there. And, you know, we were pulling people off the street, Juneau residents and visitors alike, pulling on that round blanket, pulling on the blanket toss. We want people to be able to have the full appreciation and experience of Native art. So when you come to the Walter Soboloff, you're going to be able to go into our museum, experience a little bit of our history and our culture. You're going to be able to go into the clan house and maybe hear someone telling Native stories or Native dancing. You're going to go out into the campus and you're going to be able to see Native artists making totem poles, canoes, also adjoining on the Sea Alaska Plaza. For example, I think very soon, later when it gets a little bit warmer, you're going to see a canoe being carved. done by one of our sister organizations, Gold Belt. So it's not just Sea Alaska Heritage. It's the Native community in its entirety. And also the city. I mean, the city has been a great partner in naming Heritage Square. Right there in front of the building is named Heritage Square. There'll be this recognition and support coming from the city to make this a grand vision. It's not just a Sea Alaska Heritage Institute vision. I like to think of it as a whole reawakening and remaking of Juneau. I mean, we have a culture that survived 10,000 years. I mean, think about it. We've been here for at least 10,000 years, and maybe even longer than that. We're involved in doing some underwater archaeology work, and we're going to be doing some research in underwater caves. And just some of the preliminary evidence is dating it back to 16,000 years, 17,000 years. So you think about a population that lived in this environment for these many years and survived through climate change, changes in our environment, changes in our social world, but yet survived all of the challenges that we as Native people have faced. And so there's got to be some value in that. And we're saying these values are things we want to share.
When you look at this project in its totality, because it seems huge to have a totem trail, to have bronze masks representing other cultures, to have an art center. I mean, there's so many facets to this. How do you think that this is something that will benefit the whole community beyond the Native community?
Well, I think we have to just go back to a basic scientific premise, and that is diversity. You know, diversity, whether it's cultural, biological, we know that diversity has allowed us to survive and thrive in our first biological community and our social and human community. And so here we are as an Indigenous group that's survived for thousands of years. And we want people to see some of those benefits. And I think it's going to help us build a better and healthier society. I mean, right now we know that we are experiencing a lot of trauma. And all of the work that we've done in integrating our language, culture, and arts into the schools, we've seen the progress. We've seen academic achievement among Native students. We've seen non-Native children wanting to learn about Tlingits and also to participate in our activities. I like to tell the story of one of our first Fridays, where our artists are out there demonstrating their art and selling their art. But we also have dancing and singing. And one Friday night, we had one of the dance groups singing and dancing. And in comes this little boy. He was about 4 years old. He's non-Native, but he was just dancing up a storm. His hands were up in the air and he was stomping his foot. He was having that connection to our land and to our place. And I think those are wonderful feelings. And I really think that kind of diversity, that interrelationship between diverse cultures, I think that makes for healthier societies. We've learned this from science. Diversity is good for us as human beings, as living beings.
So you look at this as an inside out kind of thing. The culture begins and it enriches everybody. I was wondering about the economic side of the equation, because once you have something in place that's good, it tends to draw other good things to it. Yes. Something success builds upon success. And so I was wondering what you see for the city as you develop this campus and kind of give downtown Juneau more of a Native face.
Yes. Well, I think if we just look at celebration, we have a 4-day event. A 4-day event in which we celebrate our culture with song and dance, with art markets, with fashion shows, with baby regalia reviews, a parade through town, lectures on various aspects of our culture, arts, and history. And during that 4-day time period, we know that we bring in over $2 million into the city. And we haven't done a thorough study of it, But the study that we did a number of years back by McDowell Group shows that celebration in of itself brings in $2 million into the city in those 4 days. And we didn't even count all of the other benefits, you know, travel, things like that. So we know that it enriches our community economically as well.
If a tourist comes to Juneau right off the cruise ship, they're going to be hit with all this wonderful art. So take me on a tour.
Okay. Well, the very first thing that I think people will want to come to is to the Walter Sobeloff building. They are going to see exhibit and usually have two exhibits. And sometimes we have the juried art show there as well. So they're going to be seeing the cultural aspects of our culture. And then also the art will have a focus on the arts. But then you'll go into our clan house and you will see in the Walter Sobeloff building the best Northwest Coast arts in the country. We were very fortunate to have the masters of the masters of Northwest Coast art. You have Robert Davidson, Haida, super master artist. And he's such a humble man, but his art is on the outside of the building. And the building itself is a work of art. But it also, what I like to think is that it also integrates us into the modern world. It's very much developed around our traditional architecture, but then it also shows our presence in the modern day society with the use of glass and metal. And that's Robert Davidson. I mean, he is the foremost Northwest Coast artist in my mind. And he is certainly the foremost Haida artist. And so on the outside of the building, you'll see the works of this master artist. You walk into the building and you see a clan house. And in front of the clan house is, again, another master piece of art carved by David Boxley, the foremost Tsimshian artist. So we were very fortunate. We have Haida on the outside, Tsimshian art in the foyer front of the clan house. And according to Bill Holm, who in my mind is a Northwest Coast art scholar, and he said that this piece on the front of the clan house is going to be David Boxley's iconic piece. This is the piece that he's going to be known for in history. And it's great art, but it also depicts the Tsimshian society, their four clans. You walk into the clan house, and the first thing you see is this glass screen, the largest made Northwest Coast glass screen in the country, made by a master artist, Preston Singletary. So just in the building alone, you're going to see, you know, the finest pieces of Northwest Coast art made by Haida, Tsimshian, and Tlingit. And then if you step to the left side, you can go into the store and see, you know, native art made by the best of native artists from around the state. But the other thing about this is that in going into the store and looking at this fine art and perhaps purchasing some of that art, you are supporting the survival of native cultures. Because in our rural communities, in our communities, we don't have viable cash economies. Our communities are still dependent on what we call dual economies, where they are dependent on a subsistence economy, hunting and fishing, as well as a cash economy. And to support that subsistence economy, some of our people have taken to doing art, arts and crafts. And so you'll see ivory, you'll see fur, polar bear from all throughout the state. Okay, let's go outside. And outside, we see that 360-degree totem pole I told you about. But in addition to that, you are going to see five monumental masks in bronze. And these monumental masks represent the major cultural groups in Alaska. So we're going to have, again, the master artisans from these different cultural groups. You're going to have Larry Avakana from the Inupiat making masks. You're going to have all of the other master artists from all the different Yupik, Alutiiq groups, and they'll be all there. And we like to say this is going to be the gateway to the rest of Alaska, because we'll also have educational posts about each of these cultural groups. Hopefully you'll be able to look in that window and see our artists carving maybe totem poles or a canoe, or maybe working on paddles. Are you going to be able to see weavers working on the Chilkat robes or raven robes, or the basketry itself? And then on the outside, some performing arts. You may have storytellers, dance groups, or even the blanket toss. Then if we move towards the front of Sea Alaska Building, you're going to be two totem poles there representing the Tlingit and the Haidas, and we'll have an eagle totem pole and we'll have a raven totem pole. So that will be in front of the Sea Alaska Building as well. And maybe they're going to have the original totem poles that were used to make the bronze posts that are in front of the Sea Alaska Heritage Building, right there on the corner. So if we walk down to the waterfront, right smack in the middle of the waterfront, you're going to see totem poles from both the Akwan, the Thinedi, and the Wushkitan. And then you're going to see the Taku clans, the Ishkahitan, and the Yanyedi. And let me tell you, those clans right now are working on the crests. They are selecting the crests that they want to see on their own totem poles. So you'll see storyboards right alongside those totem that will tell the story of the clan and their history, their migration. Like on our totem pole, the Thunderbird totem pole, we're going to have a Thunderbird. We're going to have the House Lord from the Sun telling the story about when a young woman, she was really spectacular and no one was worthy except the Sun. So she goes and lives with the Sun, but like a true Tlingit or true native, they always want to go home. So we have the story of the House Lord from the Sun, the children from the Sun. So you just walk along that path and you're going to be learning about the history, not only of the Tlingits, but also the Tsimshian and the Haida. But as you're walking along, you'll see all these other things, you know, that the city has put up, the signage that they've done. So that is in the future for our visitors.
Well, just in wrapping things up, when people see all these things that are soon going to become a reality, what do you hope they're filled up with? What do you hope they take away with them?
Well, I hope that they, first of all, get an appreciation for this country's First Nations people. So they're going to see the richness and the diversity of our country. I always say one of Alaska's greatest resources is its cultural diversity. So I'm hoping, you know, that people are going to come away from seeing a living culture. I wanted to stress also that they're going to see young people. You're going to see young children singing our songs, speaking our language. And that's where the schools come in. I do want to acknowledge that our schools are very much involved in this effort, this revitalization, this reintegration of our language and culture into our society through the educational program. So I think it's going to be a great experience for visitors and our residents as well.
We've been talking with Rosita Worrell, president of the Sea Alaska Heritage Institute. And when we come back, we'll talk with a different kind of dream weaver. How Lily Hope uses goat's wool and cedar bark to spin a vision of the future.